On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, a podcast brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other publications. And today, I'm pleased to have with us on the show, Steve Anderson, who's the author of the Bezos Letters. Steve, you say tomato, I say tomato, so it might be Bezos or Bezos. I'm sure you'll correct me.
He says it's Bezos, so I usually go by what he calls himself.
All right, good. But Steve, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, Peter, always a great pleasure to talk with you.
Well, thanks. And so the story of this book is really interesting, to me at least, maybe to our listeners as well. And it has its roots in your research you were doing for the a project for the Agents Council for Technology, which is part of the Big I. Maybe you could just kind of lay out a little bit about how this happened.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. And you're exactly right. It does. So I was co-chair of the Changing Nature of Risk work group for ACTS. And even a little bit prior to taking on that responsibility, I'd been certainly looking at how technology had grown and has continued to grow and how much faster it feels like it's coming at us. And I had this idea that the biggest risk a business takes today is actually not taking enough risk. And certainly counterintuitive for our industry, where everything we do every day is to help mitigate, reduce, transfer risk. But with technology, I really started exploring this idea that companies didn't have and don't have today the time they used to examine, you know, new technology, its impact, how it could change their business model. And that led me to really starting outline and actually writing a different book. That book, the original one, was called The Risk Dilemma. Are you taking too much risk or not enough? And I started researching as part of that process. Certainly companies who didn't do it well. And so BlackBerry and Kodak and Blockbuster and now Sears, all examples of companies that didn't make a transition because of technology well. And I also started looking at companies that have been doing it well and came across Amazon. And the letters to shareholders as part of my research. And I read a few letters and then read a few more letters and then literally sat down and read all 20 at the time letters, there are now 21, as a narrative, and realized that Jeff Bezos had laid out his plan for growing Amazon from the very beginning. And kind of, again, that risk mindset, I realized that Bezos is actually the master of risk, and that's what I call him in the book, because of how he looks at risk-taking and how strategically he thinks about it and has implemented it within Amazon. And I believe that's one of the reasons they've grown to be the size that they are today.
Yeah, so I should point out that the book is called The Bezos Letters, 14 Principles to Grow Your Business Like Amazon. And surprise, surprise, the book's available on Amazon and other locations. I like the cover with his baldish head in the back, from the back. But I really enjoyed the book, Steve. I think you've laid it out really well in terms of the you know, bites, chunks of things to think about. And it's very well written, very well researched. And I like how you pulled from each of those letters kind of a theme that's running through there. Clearly, this guy, is just a fascinating character and extremely articulate. And it's one thing that I saw in those letters, just so articulate and really lucid descriptions of where the company is going. And talk about, if you will, Steve, the concept of it's always day one around here, as he said.
Yeah, that's actually principle number 14. And for Bezos, it really is a mindset and how he thinks about Amazon. And in the very first letter, he actually talks about it being day one for the internet. Now, remember, this is 1997. Internet's brand new. Nobody really knows yet exactly what it's going to be. And day one for the internet and day one for Amazon if we execute well. And so for him, it's keeping that mindset of being a startup. And that theme has run through every single letter. In fact, if you go to the last letter, which is 2018, he ends that letter like he's ended virtually every single letter prior to that. As always, and I'm quoting now, as always, I attach a copy of our original 1997 letter, which that's a whole interesting principle and idea there. And then he ends with, it remains day one. And so day one is a mindset at Amazon that he continues to try and instill in everyone who works there, to the point of always using that phrase. The office building where his office is in Seattle, Washington, is called the Day One Building. And he has a plaque in the lobby of that building that basically says there's still so much to be invented on behalf of the customer. And so how do you grow and keep a culture when now Amazon has a little over 700,000 employees worldwide and still have that same startup mindset culture? That to me was a fascinating question.
Okay. And I don't want to go through the book in order because it would be a very, very long podcast. There's so much in here.
We can't do that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, in thinking of the application to the insurance industry, which you and I have bounced around, and in your case, even in the industry for decades, and it just seems that the industry, it just so, I don't know whether it's ironic or coincidental or what the term is, but it's the industry is all about risk, all about taking risk away from clients, the policyholder, and bearing some of that risk that they face as a business or a family. And yet, when it comes to innovation internally, very few of these companies, I wouldn't want to guess, but I know it's probably 5% in my heart of hearts of companies really adopt this kind of creative thinking, you know, breaking things that aren't broken, that sort of thinking. But it occurs to me that there was one reference, and I believe it's Principle 7, which is how to generate decisions that are really game changing. And and this again comes from Bezos, but Bezos says that there's two types of decisions, type one and type two. And I thought of type one as kind of what the industry does, what the insurance industry typically does. And type two is probably not as frequent. Maybe you can speak a little bit about that now, Steve.
Yeah, so the principle is called generate high velocity decisions. And at Amazon, they move fast. It's kind of the idea of move fast and break things. But it's also very intentional. So he describes, again, this is all coming out of the letters, two types of decisions, the ones you said, one and two. Type one decisions are decisions that are break the bank, are big decisions, we're betting the company. And he says those decisions should be made slowly, intentionally, with as much data as you can possibly gather. Type two decisions are decisions that can be reversed. They can be changed. And he says those decisions you should make with as much as 70% of the information that you would want to have, but you're not going to get it. And the idea here is type two, his description is, if I walk through that door and I don't like what I see on the other side, I can turn around and come back. And that's the separation between type one and type two. Type two decisions should be made quickly, with as much information as you can, but not waiting too long. And they should be made at the lowest level of authority as possible that can make a good decision. And what he says is, as companies grow, they tend to move from type two to type one decisions. Again, tying back in this day one idea of being a startup. And when they move to type 1 decisions is when you get to multiple layers of approval. You have to go through this committee or this supervisor or this director or this VP in order to move up the chain. And when you do that, you start slowing things down, which impacts your ability to invent. And again, the phrase Bezos uses all the time is inventing on behalf of the customer. And so Amazon defaults to action, not default to study. And that is one of the reasons they continue to be considered one of the most inventive and innovative companies. And Peter, I have to go back to the comment you made about even in the industry now, right? Carriers and brokers and agencies are all talking about needing to be innovative. I think they're getting the cart before the horse. They actually need to be experimenting first. And that ties into principle number one, encourage successful failure. At Amazon, they embrace failure. In fact, they know they're going to fail. Their employees are going to fail. And they embrace that because, again, back to Bezos in his letters, he says, if you experiment and you know you're going to succeed, it's not an experiment. By its very nature, an experiment means you're going to fail. How you respond to that failure is key. So at Amazon, it starts with experimentation and leads to invention, something new, prime, something brand new nobody's ever thought of before. And then that leads to innovation, improving on what the invention was, prime as an example.
Yeah, that's reminiscent of what happened at 3M, where one of the product development folks, maybe even a scientist, I don't know, came up with the idea of sticky notes, when in fact they were just supposed to be notes, just a loose, you know, just notes loose or bound together in some way. It was a total accident, from what I tell. I can tell from history.
Actually, what happened is they were experimenting with different kinds of glues, you know, to be able to put on the back of paper and stick. And this particular glue variation didn't hold tight. You could pull it off, but it remained sticky, so you could put it back on. And as the failure of not finding the better glue became the Post-it notes product, because now you can stick them, peel them off, stick them back. It actually became one of their most successful products.
Yeah. The other thing, you know, you and I have heard this too, Steve. You mentioned it's the word innovative, innovation. But I can't tell you how many times I've heard the words customer experience and AKA CX come up in recent years at all the industry meetings we've been at. And it's really overdue that our industry, insurance, that people do obsess over the customer, that it's not just about one-way marketing and shouting at people. It's also listening to people and really trying to, as you say in principle four, obsess over the customer. I get the sense, just talking to people in the industry, that when they think of great customer service or they think of an example of customer experience, they'll say things like, yeah, we need a website. We need one like Amazon. They always compare to Amazon. It goes without saying, but I guess this principle of obsess over the customer has led, along with the experimentation and other things, has really led to a digital experience, a user experience on that site that's truly, it's almost like it anticipates where you're going, what you're going to buy next and what should buy next. It's truly amazing. So maybe you could talk a little bit about how and why they obsess over the customer.
So I thought the word obsess and obsessive was a really interesting choice of words by Bezos. And he actually talks about it in the 1997, the original letter to shareholder, where he has a whole section called Obsess Over Customers. And the whole idea here is you invent on behalf of the customer to streamline their experience. And he continues to follow that theme through all the way through to the 2018 letter as a core value. Now, as you said, Peter, you know, in the industry, at least, we certainly talk about customer focus and customer service, customer experience, you know, all of those kinds of things. But there's a different connotation with the word obsess, I think. And that's what really intrigued me. And Amazon does that really well, because when they invent on the behalf of the customer, they're always looking for how can I make the customer's life with me, Amazon, better, easier, less friction. And when I ask people why they shop on Amazon, typically the response is, it's just easy. And it is. And they've spent years and billions of dollars to make it so easy, so that you will buy more on their site. That's their goal. And so that becomes a real key idea and criteria, and certainly a different way of thinking. I heard a VP of transportation speak here in Nashville at an Amazon event, and he had said he had worked at several other great companies who were customer focused. And he said, but at Amazon, we obsess over the customer, and everything they do starts through the lens of the customer. And they ask, will this be better for the customer? And let me give you a quick example. I mentioned Prime earlier. So Amazon Prime started in the early 2000s, free 2-day shipping. Well, one, it was a crazy idea that nobody at Amazon almost literally thought was a good idea except Jeff Bezos. But why did they do it? Because Bezos had a gut feeling that that was a friction point for people. If I have to pay for shipping, I might hesitate about buying. But if I don't have to pay for shipping, then I can, you know, buy whatever I need and have it show up. Well, it was better for the customer. Was it expensive? Hugely expensive. But Bezos felt intuitively that if it's better for the customer, it will ultimately be better for Amazon and their shareholders. And he's certainly proven to be right in that point, but it took a while. So one of the key things with Bezos is he does think long term. You know, so even now, as we're looking at Prime, where they are moving from 2-day to 1-day shipping, going to be hugely expensive. Logistics are very difficult, yet they've got a long-term view, and it's what the customers want. So they invent on behalf of the customer. And if I may, let me give you one other little thing to think about.
Sure.
In our industry, agents and brokers, core value, most would say, is customer service. We take care of our customers. But here's a different way of thinking. At Amazon, a customer needing to contact them because of an issue or something they need done is a failure, not a value. Because it means that something went wrong in the process. And so I talk about it in the book. Karen, my wife, ordered some coffee. It was the wrong kind. She went back, and what was on the website that she ordered wasn't what she received. So she contacted customer service. They said, we're sorry, we'll send you another one. But they went back and they corrected the original problem of why it was wrong. So that's one. Two is, are there self-service options available so you can fix it yourself? You don't even have to call us or chat with us or contact us. And number three is, what can we do to automate paying attention when a customer has a problem and proactively reach out and fix it? And that happens a lot, for example, on the new streaming services when Amazon Prime added streaming. If you have a problem with the streaming and the quality's not good, you had to start and stop, it had to buffer, Amazon built automated systems to monitor that and proactively refund your money for a movie you rented. That's a different way to think about customer service than at least what the industry is. And I am not suggesting you you get rid of your phones and you never talk to your customers. But I am suggesting that customer obsession will lead you to how can you improve and reduce the friction of customers interacting with you. You and I were both recently at the Applied Net conference, and there was a slide up there that I actually took a picture of. And I'm not pulling up the exact number, but I believe based on a recent survey, 76% of agents and brokers do not have a self-service customer portal. And I think, you know, and again, I get all the objections, right? Oh, well, we want to talk to our customers. Well, I don't care what you want. What does your customer want? I want to just get something done when I need it. And I'll take a breath now. I know I've talked a long time. Sorry.
No, it's there's so much to unpack there. You know, I just figure I'll let you run, Steve. I mean, there are so many parallels. I couldn't agree with you more about the whole concept of service. And I would also say, even before you can know what to offer to people in terms of self-service and anticipating their needs kind of things, but who is the customer? I find it so interesting how even in a small agency, there's a disconnect between who the owners think the customer is and who like the service staff think the customer is. And they often don't know actually who's on the books and what are the groups, because it's rarely one set of customer. It's usually a multiple number of sets, unless your agency is all about one particular marketing specialty or niche. There's going to be a variety of people, and really understanding how they're different and how you can chunk them out, because it may be that when you go through that process of writing description of a good customer, as you say on page 77 in Principle 4, that you find that, you know, maybe we're better off with a smaller number of target customers, or we just prune the rose bush and say, you know what, these folks are not going to be the kind of customers we want. We see too often where not just carriers with having too many agents perhaps, but agents with having too many customers that where they can't quite figure out what services, because they're so vastly different in what they want from their agent. And so you have to, right. I think this is a great opportunity, you know, as we're starting 2020, to look at the book.
No question. And, you know, data is very important at Amazon. And actually, that's principle number 13. Measure what matters, question what's measured, and trust your gut. Well, you need to measure. And again, agencies don't do that well. In fact, I just recently spoke to a group and we talked about data and analytics. And my point, what I said was, you can't talk about analytics and understanding your book until you can confirm that you actually have good data to analyze. And for most agencies, they do not do a good job of enforcing data entry and highlighting where there are problems in the database. So that means you can't really understand the numbers that are coming out. And so simple things like you said, book a business report. Where is my business? Who am I currently attracting? Who do I want to attract? Do I have a lot of customers that are one policy customers? Well, that's very expensive. So how do I move and manage? But understanding your agency information is critical to be able to make those decisions.
Steve, I want to just to wrap up by really focusing on, and I'm so glad you addressed this, or Jeff did, and that is the kind of the inside, the culture, how the employees work. There's a couple of principles at least that talk about culture. One is Principle 10, promote ownership, and the other is Principle 11, maintain your culture. Can you speak a little bit about how Bezos, you know, really obsessed about his people, the hiring, the training, the promoting ownership, and how over time has really bore fruit for Amazon?
Yeah, it's really interesting, and I'm trying to verify the year, but early 2000s, he writes in a shareholder letter, and he starts off with, owners are different than tenants. And he goes through a story of a friend that rented a house, had a rental house, and the tenants nailed their Christmas tree to the hardwood floors of the house. And he makes that a connection or analogy by saying, you know, when you own the house, you would never think of doing that because of the consequences. As a tenant, you might not think of it. And so for Bezos, from actually the very first 1997 letter, he says, employees are going to be key to helping us grow. And I'm quoting now, we will weight their compensation to stock options rather than cash. We know our success will be largely affected by our ability to attract and retain a motivated employee base, each of whom must think like and therefore must actually be an owner. And that's the key idea here. And actually, stock options are still the standard way of a standard part of the compensation for employees. They actually pay a little below market salaries, but they also have a pretty generous stock option program. And certainly over the last number of years, the stock pricing has been positive.
Yeah.
And then you had asked about, maintain your culture. And again, my question was, how did Bezos grow from himself, literally as the first employee, and then a handful of employees, and again, continuing to grow over the last 25 years to now over 700,000 employees? Well, part of that maintaining your culture is building in ways of reinforcing that from the top down. And let me give you a quick example of that. Hiring, he identified, again, very early in first letter and continued to talk about the importance of good quality, high-valued employees and high standards. And so they have a position at Amazon called a bar raiser. So anytime somebody's interviewed for a non-fulfillment center job, there is somebody there who has special training on how to identify those potential employees, those people who are interviewing for a new job, that they will fit into the culture and they will be able to, in his phrase now, raise the bar. And so the bar raiser has veto power over hiring somebody if they don't feel like they meet the high standards necessary to work at Amazon. And that's certainly a lot of talk around Amazon about, working there, and it is difficult. But again, in the 97 letter, he talks about the importance of keeping those standards high. And again, I'm quoting, but we are working to build something important, something that matters to our customers, something that we can tell our grandchildren about. Such things aren't meant to be easy. We're incredibly fortunate to have this group of dedicated employees whose sacrifices and passion build Amazon.com. That's part of the culture. It's continuing to reinforce that throughout the organization, no matter how large it is. And Bezos says now his main job is to educate junior executives on really the Amazon way, or how we think at Amazon, to make sure that that culture is sustained. And he actually has several letters where he delves quite deeply into company culture and what it means and how he thinks about culture. But we don't have time to go through all of those right now. But I think it's key for anybody listening that you have a culture, whether you know it or not. And that culture impacts the results in your growth as an organization.
Yeah. Yeah, the analogy I use, or the metaphor, however you want to describe it, is that, to your point, you do have a culture whether you like it or know it, it exists, but it does. It's like you either have a culture that is like a piece of bread that you leave out on the counter, and over time it develops this haphazard, disgusting kind of look to it with, hair coming out of it in different colors. But it's the culture. It's the same kind of culture that is in like a nice, clean, or the same, I should say, maybe chemistry process that creates like Greek yogurt, which is a very curated, clean style, but it's still a culture. And that's mm-hmm. what Jeff's done at Amazon. It's a very clean, curated culture as opposed to the haphazard piece of bread. but you got to pay attention to it for sure. Take care of your people, take care of your employees, and they'll take care of the customers. Another way that we've seen this said before.
Right.
So let me just ask one final thing before we wrap up, and that is, it seems like Bezos is obsessed, or was obsessed, or is obsessed with space and going out into outer space. And there was a reference in there in the book somewhere. I can't find it right now, but it was like that Mother Earth is going to be like a big theme park one day where people are going to be living elsewhere. I don't know where, on planets or in space, but then Earth will be a place that they visit, like you visit a theme park or the Grand Canyon today. That is really interesting. And people who would say that mankind is kind of screwing the Earth up, with global warming and things that are happening in the world, it's kind of scary if that continues. Maybe the Earth won't be very friendly down the road, like centuries from now. But he just thinks about things completely differently, doesn't he?
Yeah, he absolutely does. So a couple of quick comments on that. First, he was valedictorian of his high school class, and his speech said pretty much just what you said, that he felt that manufacturing, factories, work should be done in space, and that the Earth, because it is the best planet that we know of, should be preserved as a national park. Now, think about that. He said that in high school. And then in 2000, he started his space company called Blue Origin. Didn't tell almost literally anybody about it for about 5-6 years. And today, he personally funds that entity to the tune of $1 billion a year, because he believes that his responsibility and his passion now is to create the infrastructure for space travel. Meaning, and he talks about this, that when he started Amazon, the internet was already in place. Package delivery between UPS and the Postal Service was already in place. Credit cards were already in place. He didn't have to build all of that to build his company. Today, you cannot start a space company in a college dorm room. His goal is in future generations, and he's not sure how long it'll take, that will be possible, because it will be the infrastructure for space travel will have been built. And he feels that that's what his goal is. So as you said, he thinks differently and counterintuitively. So he is attacking some of the problems we have on Earth by creating the means to move manufacturing and, you know, tap into the minerals that are in asteroids, right? All of those potential benefits in space, so that we can do a better job of preserving the Earth.
Yeah. Well, Steve, I want to thank you for your time. I want to congratulate you on a fine book. It's a wonderful read. Again, it's called The Bezos Letters, 14 Principles to Grow Your Business Like Amazon, by Steve Anderson, with Karen Anderson. I should have mentioned that earlier. Your lovely wife, who I know well too, has played a role in this beautiful book. And
she played a very big role in this book, yes.
Yeah, I know. We all need our handlers, as it were. When you, having authored a book myself, I would say that it's kind of like giving birth. It took 9 months, but that would be unfair to moms out there.
I
think it's terrific, and the application to the insurance industry, whether you're a small startup insurance agency, a well-established agency, a broker, carrier, MGA, reinsurance, there's a tech provider, insurtech. There's so much in here for everybody. And so again, a fine read. Thanks for your time again, and I wish you all the best with the book.
Thanks, Peter. It's always a pleasure talking with you. Appreciate you having me on.
Yes, sir. Take care.